That's why I'm having trouble with mine, because I've got the charger in the bottom, so I'm like standing it on the charger.
Okay, welcome to Kinkstars Podcast. I'm McGarriff. Today I'm going to the very properly iconic. So Evelyn, it's so good to have you on, and thank you for the time out. Fuck, how are you?
I'm okay. I'm just a bit on a high after a nice cycle home from the dungeon after a big session. And looking forward to having a chat and catching up.
I know, I've not seen you in ages. I think the last time I saw you were running a... And now you've like separate dungeon versus house. How's that working for you?
I don't even have my own dungeon anymore. I shut it down a couple of months ago.
What? Okay.
Yeah, the dungeon in London, my goal was to be right in the centre of London. And so it was basically between home and my dungeon, just between rent, council tax, bills, etc. And it was already £5,000 a month outgoing that I would cover before even starting to profit.
That is odd.
Yes.
I've got it lucky up here. Like, my overheads aren't much. Gosh, it's so it's expensive to be a dom before you even make any money. But anyway, we were talking about tea, and since you're lower parts of the queue, what is the correct tea? And I know this is controversial. Boris Johnson put the milk in with tea bag out and stuff. That swayed my vote for sure.
So I was brought up in France, where if you go into any bar, any cafe, ask for a cup of tea, they will serve you a cup on the side to dunk in yourself.
Okay.
And yeah, they don't put milk in their black tea. But how I make tea, I learned from watching when I was in university, watching it. And I think the important thing is definitely pour the water. We're talking like classic, like Yorkshire tea, Tetley tea bag tea.
Yeah.
Not going fancy. Put your tea bag in your mug. Pour the hot water on it. I actually do it just under boiling. I do it 95 degrees.
Okay. Do you measure it with
pour the hot water on and instantly stir a lot. Because if you don't stir, you get that nasty scum on the cup.
Oh.
Do you know what I'm talking about? If you put water in.
Where does the scum come from? Is it from the water there?
It's from the bag.
What?
It's like, have you never seen this? If you just pour water onto the tea bag and leave it without stirring and come back to it like after 2 minutes, there's like this scum on the top of your cup.
Oh my God.
So yeah, always stir.
Pour
the tea bag out and pour some milk in.
So tea bag out first, milk in. This is the way that I would do it. My partner puts the milk in, then puts the tea bag in, then puts the hot water in, and if he's having sugar, that all goes in at the same time. As I'm just like,
what a mess.
It's just so, it's masochistic for me to watch. I can't do it. My God, this is probably going to be...
You put the tea in first, because it's one thing putting milk in and then pouring ready brewed tea over the top. But if you're putting milk in and then putting water in the tea bag in, if there's already milk, the tea bag doesn't macerate. The tea doesn't come out.
I know. It just tastes like watery brown water.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm going to make him listen to this intently. He gets this. So you mentioned that you're France. So I want to know a bit about your life for growing up. How did you end up in the UK?
So both my parents are English, and they moved to France before I was born. So they moved to the Swiss Alps, to a tiny little village. So my father hates people, so he tries to move as far away as possible. So I was in a tiny village in France with 200 inhabitants in it, going to primary school in a building that was about the size of my living room with 12 students of all different ages and one teacher. So I had a very bucolic childhood where we just go off and wander in the mountains, build tree houses and climb cliffs, all of that kind of stuff. When I was 19, I moved to England to go to university. Quit university, got a job in kitchen, moved to Canada on a whim, stayed there for 5 years, came back. Worked in London, absolutely horrific, because in London, it's like slave trade. You have so little, and you're totally replaceable. So you're just a cog in a giant machine. No one cares. So kitchens in London ate me up and spat me out pretty much. And yeah, that's so when I made the switch from kitchen to dominatrix, I'd say I was at a point in my life where I was just like, I need something else. I need something else. I can't live my life like this. I'll be dead by the time I'm 35.
That's interesting. So I take it when you work in a kitchen and you get, someone just decides what hours the job's done when it's done. And I worked in catering when I was younger, not at the level. I remember it just in sore, don't finish, polishing, wiping down endless fucking. It was so labouring.
It is, it's labour. It's labour, you know, kitchens is labour. It's like being a builder or something like that. You work the moment you get there to the moment, especially in London, you don't like, in kitchens I've worked in other places, you know, all the staff would sit down around a table, have a proper lunch together, et cetera, et cetera. In London, it would be like, go and get your food, take your bowl to your workstation, wolf down your bowl of food in the space of like, and then and often we do double shifts, so that's like 2 8-hour shifts in a row, which means hours on your feet, only having the occasional smoke break, and even then you can't sit down because you're outdoors, you're standing. Yeah, I would love to have had a Fitbit when I worked to see how many steps I used to do it.
Oh my god. So is a love of food what got you into
not really. I didn't know how to cook when I first started as a chef. really, I could have saved my life. What got me into kitchens was actually just realizing that I wasn't an academic, and I needed to learn to do something with my hands.
So you're quite a physical.
Yeah, it was like, you know, I was in university doing Arabic and Islamic studies, and one morning I woke up, looked myself in the mirror, I was like, why are you here? And the only answer is like, as a parent, you have to go to university.
That I think that's a story that is true for a lot of people. Sold this story that you go to university and people are just naturally geared to plumbers and things like that. And there seems to be, I've read an article that was saying the shortage now, skilled has been sold thing of like, you must go. So when you left kitchens, like, did you lose that love? Do you enjoy cooking?
I love cooking. I take great pleasure in cooking for people. I love them. I especially love being able to, that they particularly love, but don't know how to cook.
Oh, right. Okay.
Make something for someone that's like their favorite food, but they're not capable of making for themselves. Cat fights. Don't know if you heard that.
Mine have been destroying my bedroom because I won't let them in the living room right now, and I can just hear like cartoon crashes behind, so hopefully the audio doesn't pick that up.
But yeah, no, I really still love food. I love eating out, I love cooking. I love, yeah, just night before last I made brownies and gave them to all my neighbors.
Oh, nice.
And also actually cooking, well, being a chef, me loads of really good transferable skills for being a dom.
Is kink something that you've always to, or that you picked up and then you've to it?
Not kink, but sex definitely. So from a very young age, so I started masturbating when I was like 3 years old, really. Then when I was about 8 or 9, I started really looking through my parents' book collections and finding all their dirty books and started reading them. And they had like illustrated sex, which was in the 70s, and it was written on the front, the colour illustration. And it just had everything. It was so complete. So like at the age of, you know, by the age of 9, I already knew about like New York gay hanky code.
And what is so, that?
So in the 70s and stuff, gay men in America had this code where they'd have like a little hanky in their back pocket, and depending on the color, like our pink wristbands, right? So depending on the color, like if they had a yellow hanky, brown hanky, hard sports, red hanky would mean they were into corporal punishment, you know. Then there's a top hanky, bottom hanky, depending on which pocket it's in.
That's amazing. I had no idea.
Yeah, but so I was aware of all this crazy stuff because this book went into like detail and like loads of stuff. And yet somehow, even with all of that, femdom never really shot out to me, you know. I really wasn't aware that it was a thing, even though there were like dominant women in popular culture, etc., etc. Because I was brought up in France where it's so patriarchal and women so put down all that. I never had an issue. I thought it's men who are in power and women getting spanked. And I am in no way... so it just never ever occurred to me. But I was always attracted to sexuality. I was always super dominant, you know. I lost my virginity on a one night stand because I went to a girl's birthday party. I was like, I am fed up of being a virgin. That guy will do. Then when I was going to university, I really wanted mythology, but I was science, so I couldn't go and do that. And then while I was in university, I worked for Ann Summers. You know, so I've always had sort of interest. Oh, God, when I was so when I took my gap year, I nearly ended up working in a hostess bar as well. So like I'd always been attracted to sort of sexuality, sex work, you know, all that kind of stuff. It had always been there. And then, yeah, when I guess then I found out about femdom and it was like a light bulb going off.
Cool. So that, this is this how you decided to be professional?
Yeah, it was, you know, at the end of my tether with kitchens and found out about femdom at the same time. And it was like, oh, my God. and yeah, and then it just happened. Everything fell into place, you know, serendipity. The universe made everything fall into place. Just go straight into it within the space of like 2 weeks.
Oh, my next question was going to be, was there a transition piece? That's so quick.
Yeah, 2 weeks. And then within I'd say a month and a half, I quit my job.
So do you remember your first
Yeah.
How was it?
Awful. Really? It was absolutely dreadful. I had no idea what I was doing. Unlike all the ladies who come to the dominatrix school and get an education, this guy who was like, oh, I'm turning 18 on such and such a day. I'd like to celebrate by, you know, having a femdom session. And I'd really like to try pegging. So I went to a sex shop, bought a small beginner dildo, which was really far too short, right? You know when they sell you the little stubby one, maybe like 10 centimeters long. So it would be like four. And yeah, a strap-on belt, and I didn't have gloves, I didn't have wipes. I think I did take lube, but I didn't have like all the stuff that you'd normally have, right?
Yeah.
And I didn't rent a dungeon. I turned up at his place. His place was a student hall. He had like a student hall bedroom that he shared with someone else, but they'd gone for the night. So my first session room on a little single bed. And it was awful. It was awful. I had no idea what I was. He hadn't cleaned himself out. There was poo everywhere. I didn't have gloves. And at the end of it, it was very much like, you know, when you see in movies when people have really shameful sex that they shouldn't have had and they both hate each other, and then neither of them really, that's what it was like.
Oh,
and
my God.
I went to my second session, which was my first scat session, went right into it, and shat in a bowl in it and fed it to him like cornflakes.
For your second session? This sounds a lot like my first session. There was no scat involved, but I remember my first session. Someone who's still my client, and it was in a dungeon, and a lovely guy, he'd asked for humiliation, stuff to do, food, and a bit of a play and some kind of kid on. He lived in Dubai, and I'd just come back from doing a bit of time there, so I knew the area. I knew, she thought, this is going to be. So we sat and made a chat, and we get started. So on the way there, I stopped off and I grabbed those little travel cornflake packages that get. So I got them. And
oh no, the one with the milk in it, the little
You snap it. It's like a Müller Corner yogurt, but except it's cereal. And so I got him some cornflakes, and I got him a Twix and a rolling ham. So we get into the session. I was shaking, terrified. So much pressure. Like this could be my livelihood type thing going on in my head. And so I was stamping on ham and fed it to him. Eat, that went fine. I got him to jizz and then made him sit and eat. And then and I was calling him a greedy boy and stuff. And then I got him to stick the Twix up his backside, eat that. And then I started talking about, so whereabouts in Dubai from at this place? And I was like, oh, cool. I said, I've got friends that have been shakes. And I started naming all these, like, colour drained out of his face. And he was like, huh. So you actually know people? And this is too real. And I'm like, yeah, that's fine. So, and it was so funny. And afterwards, I got this email from him that was definitely, hands down, the worst sessions I have ever had. I think you should, you know, I can't believe how bad it, like, scathing, scathing fucking review. So I wrote him back and I was like, mate, that was my first fucking session, arsehole. And he's like, oh, oh, I'm really sorry. I says, I was quite nervous. I says, but it's not going to stop me. But, you know, that first session, that could have ended my career with that response had I not mentally resilient enough to take that kind of criticism and brush off. So, but he's still my client. He flies over from Dubai and I go and we hang out and stuff. Guy is very much into Findle, so whenever he gets drunk... if you insist. So, yeah, it's... just you took me straight back to that there. I'm shitting in. It's just... Oh, man. People always ask me, like, why are people into that? And I'm literally... It's the one fetish. Where does that come from?
It's super simple. So it depends. Well, there's different reasons for it, right? For some people, it's because it's the ultimate taboo. Oh. So especially women, men, etc. Right? For them, it's really about the taboo. People, it's the humiliation of it. So a lot of people who do scat don't enjoy it when it's happening.
Yeah.
But they enjoy the build up to fear, and then they enjoy looking back on it and thinking, "Oh, I was so so hot. I was forced to do something so disgusting. I enjoy mystery used me. I was her waste, essentially a waste basket, right?" Yeah. So all as like guys who like to eat toenail clippings or to be an ashtray, but just like on the next level. And then for some men, it's a form of worship. It's like an intimacy thing. So, you know, taking a shit is something that most people never do in front of another person in their whole life. Right. So, being around a woman when she's taking a shit alone is like, in some ways for them, a super intimate act because it's something they can't even imagine what it's like. And then to be fed it is just, yeah, for them, like an act of intimacy. That you're doing something that's so hidden that, you know, two people are sharing that. And actually, I totally get it. Like whenever I do a scat double with another dom, it's always very interesting because scat doms have this very, you know, when you're comfortable with shitting around other people and you're comfortable picking up and shoving it, you know, there's a level of comfort with yourself that you have to have achieved to be able to do that. And so when you get several people in a room who are like that, you're instantly on a different level from when you meet other people. It's like, you know, yeah, I've just watched your asshole stretch out around a big shit and then I've pushed it in this guy's mouth. Like, we're totally, you know.
So it's a kind of bonding moment then. So the scat stuff, is that so that's something you've been in to start? Is it something you'd thought about before, or is it, you know, have you discovered that because someone asked? There's a lot of things that I've discovered purely because someone, this is what I want you to.
No, I did the scat because, so I had this guy who I met online who helped just try things out when I was starting.
Okay.
And he had adult work pay, all of that, because I had no idea about that. And he said to me, you should really think about doing scat because, and his words, there are not many young, pretty English girls. Do it. And I was like, he was like, can you build on someone? I was like, it's a bodily function, of course I can do it on someone. And yeah, my second session was that, and I did it and it was fine. And yeah, but then over time doing it, I really understand what it's about. And I got to doing it, and you know, it's one of my favorite things to do. I love doing toilets, love it, it's so much fun. And you know, I get to get rimmed for like 20 minutes before going for my morning shit. It's fabulous.
So I think with the scat thing, so I tried it and I'd done it a few times. I think I was just so conscious of my own arsehole the whole time that I was just like, I was so focused on myself, what I look like when I'm, you know, I was just really caught up in all of that that I did. It's not something that I've stopped about the other. So that's maybe why I couldn't really, you've just said there is a complete sense.
I see it as, it's really interesting because obviously, like you said, right, it's the classic thing of, it's the reason why I think a lot of people don't enjoy sex too, right? Because they're so scared of looking like an idiot, of not let, you know, if they let go, oh, I'll make stupid orgasm faces, I won't be sexy, et cetera, et cetera, which is bullshit. What's sold to us by Hollywood, like this, how to be sexy, how to be sensual, et cetera, et cetera. It's such a limited aesthetic, which has nothing to do with reality.
Yeah.
In the grossness, you know, some of my hottest sessions have been with ugly ass old guys, the pot belly, but they did not give a fuck, and they just got into, you know, and they just turn into filthy sluts, and they're just so into it, and that's what sex. And I think it's perfectly illustrated by, I don't know if you know this drag queen. No, well, I'll send you links to some of her videos. So Christine is a drag queen who does very, very different type of drag, right? She's grungy, dirty. She's all about sex, filth. And her whole ethos is that the beauty in life is in the gross, the ugly, in the nasty, you know? that's where we're looking, that, you know, there's more to the beauty of life, the imperfection itself. And that's very much how I see stuff. And I think Christine was actually a big part of me really understanding my own way of seeing that.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's why my tagline now is, like, for the last 2 years or so, or maybe 3 years, my tagline's been embrace the filth, because it's I'm all about that. Yeah, life is messy, life is gross. We get dirty, we get nasty, you know, we get sweaty and we have periods and we shit and we piss and we spit and there's snot and earwax and all this shit. It's all part of human experience. And, you know, who's to say that all that stuff can't be enjoyed and it's not okay to, like, be okay with periods and poo, you know?
I mean, I think early on in my career that was my kind of mindset as well. And I guess I lost my way with it a little bit. I got caught up in building my own dungeon and grow design and the DIY. And I kind of lost a lot of that free spirit because I had much rested on my own shoulders, I suppose. When I worked at the dungeon in Glasgow, my nickname in there was the rotter. I was the one that was in the vomiting. I was the one doing the shitting. I was talking about tampon tea. And everyone was just like, you're disgusting. And I just didn't give a fuck. So listening to you talk like that, it really reminds me of yourself. Maybe that's something. If only people would turn up on or not cancel last minute, they've shit themselves for scat. The last scat session that I was involved in was Argenta, was force feeding someone some scat. He was trapped in a chair and she was just spooning him this. So I came down, it was a double session. So she did the first part with the scat and the next part. And when I came down, the guy was absolutely roaring and screaming in this chair, but couldn't stop eating the shit. And I'm just like, ah! So, it takes me back to another session that I had once where the guy wanted it smooshed over his face. It was fine with those for early Twitter. So I smooshed it all over his face and I wrote shit in his own shit, like finger painted it across his chest.
I've done that.
And took photos of him and I'm just like, I did another.
I think for me, from my side of things, so like I said, there's the pleasure of getting rimmed, which I love getting rimmed. So like drinking my coffee while getting rimmed, and the rimming just like relaxes my arsehole so the shit just slides right out. It's amazing. there's the fact that, you know, I there are moments where I catch myself, like I see myself from the outside for a second, and I look at my and I'm like, oh my fucking god, someone just depowled.
And I used to think every time I flush the toilet.
Yeah, I mean, I joke around, like, you know the classic thing, right? Like Wolf of Wall Street. I mean, we've all seen ever since we're kids that thing of, you know, someone wants to be a salesman and the guy's like, okay, sell me this pen. And my response to that would be, dude, fuck selling you this pen. I have monetized shit.
Yes.
Cool. But there's that. And then there's, you know, just the fact of I love being able to be around someone and give them the space to just have fun doing something totally irreverent, totally out there that no one understands. And, you know, being able to watch them just indulge in that.
Yeah, and that's cool. That's a gift. I think it's a gift from them to us is to share that desire, because that's not something generally I see a lot of think what they're into it. And I really...
Oh, another is also... I really found that actually doing scat really helps myself, because... You know, as a woman, you always worry so much about not being sexy, not being attractive, about all your faults, about, you know, not being up to the standards that were expected. When people are paying you for your shit because they see value in literally your bodily waste, and they see your bodily waste as being sexy, then you realise that every part of you is sexy to someone.
That is true. I would say every other part of my body infinitely more attractive. Exactly. I've learned this. So what has your journey been like as a dog? Is there any highlights?
Oh god, well, 2000, okay, I would say 2013 and 2014 were totally based around blagging my way through while I actually learned what I was doing. Okay. And growing and just not I came onto the dom scene to do everything. Yeah. And totally I was like, you know what, fuck doing things by the book, I am just going to walk into this, act like out of my and do stuff my and so I just turned up. And you know, my first website, I was all in white and blush pink latex, which was totally unlike what anyone else was doing. You know, it was all pastas and very unclassic. But I just totally broke the mold because I just did it my own way. I just did not care about what was meant to be done and what was expected. I was like, fuck all that. That didn't work for me in kitchens, you know. And the people I saw rise to the top were people who just acted like their word was the word of God. So that's what I'm going to do. So just about how that worked. And then just getting really excited about it. And yeah, I think the main thing at the beginning, because I was in therapy, so I started working through a lot of my issues because I just got the best therapist. Then 2015 was kind of settling into a comfortable pace with things, having fun with Dungeon Manor, the old house that you went to,
yes.
Where we stayed. And then getting my whole life turned upside down because of my neighbour and calling the press. And then
that.
Ellie, who are having subarachnoid hemorrhage and nearly dying and 2 months in ICU and everything going to shit. And after that, I set up a separate place based in my home and just spent 3 years kind of putting a lot more effort into myself than my business. So I spent a lot of money on personal trainers to try and get my body fit. And, you know, I really put a lot of effort into friendships, into my life outside of work, and just kind of coast for
yeah.
3 years. Very much, you know, because I remember I used to, everyone knew who I was. And
yeah.
Now people don't. Like, I'm going to events again, and people don't have a clue who I am. And I'm like, I am shocked that you do not know who I am. So clearly I've been kind of taking a step back for too long now. I need to come back. So now that I've moved, I've dealt with all my shit, I've settled down again, I've got rid of my play space so money can come in and go into the savings account. This year I'm going to work on getting my brand back up again and getting my blowing, not just coast.
Good.
And yeah,
that's it. It's good to hear. I mean, I noticed that you're quiet and a bit kind of closed the dungeon to a lot of people. I think I've been doing that lately, taking some time. I was just adding to my basket and I need to say it, but
right, well,
this year is kicking down those doors again.
I used to live and work in the same space and I used to rent it out, and we had porn shoot parties, we had all this stuff, we had loads of doms coming through. So my life was 7 kink for 2 years of my 20 kink, and it wasn't just realistically, it was unhealthy. When you have a place like that that's a safe haven, it attracts a lot of people who are just desperately looking for understanding, a lot of fragile people, a lot of damage surrounding with healthy people.
Yeah.
And you know, it really took a toll on me. I think it's not, you know, Mistress Sidonia always pushes me to have balance in my life. She always says you've got to have a life outside of kin, you know, you don't get lost in it, because it's so easy, you just, once you get sucked into the whirlpool of like lifestyle kink, when you know, because most people who are lifestyle kinkers aren't working it as well.
Yeah.
So then it's a normal life by being at a normal job.
I
so
mean,
when you're pro style, you totally lose touch with reality so easily.
I noticed as well, people are living it 24/7's perspective, how they're to other people, and I've been guilty of, I'm not a dom.
I think this is a rite of passage.
Yeah.
I tell every student at the school, like, beware of domitis, but you will get it.
That is. So let's talk about your mistress school. Following that, and looks like just needs, right? I still get people asking, and they're not willing to educate. What was it that made you
set it up? It's already been going for about 6 years. So it started off with Mistress Josephine, and the governess, her, she retired from it. And Governess Elizabeth went back to Australia here, who headhunted me and asked me if I wanted to become headmistress.
Nice.
And I've done, you know, I've had a few girls who I've helped start themselves up as pro doms.
Yeah.
Mixed bag, you know. It's, I think, to have an apprentice, it's really difficult because as a dom, you don't necessarily do everything in your sessions, and you don't necessarily want another person watching.
Yeah.
And there were all these things, you know, and you might have got an apprentice, and then that month you only have like 3-4 sessions. It's a dead month. What do you do?
Exactly.
You know, and the sessions, what if all the sessions thing that month?
No, I found that.
We're going to have like 2 sessions, and then next week we're going to have 5 anals, and the week after that we're going to do scat, and then we're going to do bondage, and then we're going to do this. It doesn't work like that.
Yeah.
You know, especially as you know certain things. So you end up having like 3-4 things that are all your sessions. So I really struggled with apprentices. I struggled with how much work I should put in, what do I get out of it? And sort of boundaries, etc. It was really difficult. So then jumping on the school thing was a way for me to be able to share the knowledge, but in a more organized way where we just have classes. We've got a male model who's there, so it's one-on-one with a male model as well, and then they do. And that works really, really well. It's organized. Everyone who goes to the school learns exactly as well. So there's a standard. And it's nice because, you know, we get a lot of lifestylers as well. Because there's the professional dominatrix course, but there's the bedroom course and the kinky couples course.
Nice.
So, you know, we get couples coming in, we get ladies who very often they've got a partner who's met someone who's a submissive and he's paying for them to go on the course. They have no idea about any of it. And by the time, it's unbelievable. Like, you know, the pro dom course is fun because you get a lot of like escorts who want to become doms and stuff like that, right? So they've already got a good idea about sex work, etc., etc.
Yeah.
You've got a few, etc. But you know, when people are work focused, they're very just focused on being able to start work. But people can't like be like a blossoming flower. They're consultation, they're shy, they're awkward. No. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I've got back. And shy and all.
Yeah, so you have, you know, these women, the women who come for the bedroom, which is the lifestyler course, they come to the first class we do isn't a class, it's a consultation where I get to know them, ask them questions, tell them about what to expect, you know, answer their questions. And in that, the bedroom ladies will often be very shy, very, you know, they'll be very demure, they're very unsure about it or stand it. They're women who very often have roles their entire life, who are, you know, they've just done what's expected of them, they've done the job, they've had the kids maybe, you know, they've had the husband, they've been at home mum and mum to the husband as well.
Oh.
And they've never done anything for themselves. And they're generally coming on their new partner. Right, or their husband who's come out to kill someone else, and it always seems like, oh, she's being kind of topped from the bottom by this guy, blah blah blah. You know, still throughout the chain, you see, there's always that moment where they suddenly get it, and where they realise, and then that moment, it's like the light bulb goes on, and they realise that they are strong, that they are independent, that they can do whatever they want. And no one can stop them. So beautiful. See.
I think I want to come. It sounds so good.
I had a woman come to the class. She was this lovely African lady who was, you know, I don't know, she must have been mid-50s. And she had, you know, she started dating this guy she met at work, in an office, you know, but he was totally... And this woman, you know, she was brought up African. She's brought up with, like, a very patriarchal culture. And I remember one class, she was nearly on the edge of tears because she was realizing
how missed out
and how she, her entire life changed. And it was so beautiful.
And I think that will translate into their personal relationship.
And this is one of the things, the lifestylers, this is what really comes out of it. You know, and I start telling you, this is not just about inside your relationship. Integrate. As you discover your inner mistress, integrate her everyday life. Stand up for yourself. Stop letting people walk on you. Dress how you feel sexy, even in day-to-day life.
Great.
You know, they come in the first time, they'll be dressed demurely, and then by the end of the course, they're coming in riding boots, wearing a leather jacket, you know. Yeah!
So how long does this last?
So it's 12 classes. You can either do it like one class a month, or you can do them all in a week if you want to just do it condensed. Like, it's totally up to people, they do it. And the classes, so in the bedroom mistress course, it's all about different fetishes. In the professional, we've also got classes for, you know, personal safety, how to run your business, health and hygiene, all these things, you know, how to start yourself up and make sure that you set a solid foundation, client relations. So, you know, we deal with all these aspects of actually running business, self-employed, how to make yourself a successful entrepreneur, as well as talking about all the...
It's exactly for such a peer, when you hear, I still get pulled off.
I would never do an apprenticeship again, you know. And this is the thing, with the Dom School, we've really got it down to a fine art. It's a curriculum. Like I said, everyone gets the same classes. You know, every single person who does the same.
How expensive do you have to...
So you can pick and choose, mm-hmm. But... You know, especially for the professional mistress course, we recommend doing all 12. And it's £200 a class.
And that's considering that's...
Well, exactly.
That's definitely good value.
And some ladies who are getting into it for the first time, you know, they don't necessarily have a lot of money. I also advise them on how to start earning and practicing with online stuff. So that they can pay, you know,
pay
we
class.
Already get them to get their foot in there and start making money instantly so that they can learn how to do real-time stuff.
So when you were first starting, did you have any inspiration? Did you be an inspiration? Was there anyone that you...
There are definitely doms who, you know, I like their style, mm-hmm. who are awesome. I look up, we're all peers. And I don't think anyone's better than anyone else. Some people for sure have more experience, some people have, but I don't have an idol, okay. You know? I don't, you know, I just appreciate different things in people. Okay. Some it's their style, some it's skills, some it's how they talk, some it's how successful they are. You know, there's the appreciation everyone.
See, I've always,
there's no one who...
I've always admired your thinking outside the creative, bridging gaps, because he and I foresee where there's something. You had the ace where you were renting out, you had the separate sleeve. That's cool.
The secret is just to try everything, because when you're your own boss, if you start, there's no way you're off.
Yeah, it doesn't exactly.
matter. This is what people don't get. If you mess up, it doesn't matter, because there's no one who's going to look at you and say, oh, you've cocked up again, you're fired, you know?
Absolutely.
So it's the mentality of, it's okay if I mess up, because the only person who suffers from it is me. And the only suffering I'm getting is that I didn't. But if you don't try, you never succeed. So this is what I do. I just, the moment I have an idea, I'm like, oh, I'll just do that. And some of the things really catch on. Some of them really don't. Like, you know, I've had certain things roaring. And then sometimes I try something out and it's an absolute failure. So I cancel all the auto tweets after 2 months. And I'm like, right, we'll pack that away and never talk about it again.
Yeah, I've tried it, and it's all, like, I just learn from it, exactly, pack it away, talk about it again, move on. Nothing's ever
but
been
having it is so much fun, you know, when you have a brainstorm idea, and then you just get swept up in it, and do everything, and it takes you, like, a day to set everything up, because you're so excited.
So what's next for concocting?
Right now, I am concentrating on the school, means that I am... have to rewrite the full manual, mm-hmm. by the end of the month. It's basically when I joined the, you know, they had course, so for each class they had, you know, a printout they would send to the student, and each one was like one page,
yeah.
with sometimes two, with pictures and really big font, and I was like, that is unacceptable. So I just decided to, you know, I offered to rewrite the whole, and it's turning into a bit of, like, some classes are over 20.
Well, that's...
I wasn't very well in December, and I was just depressed and everything, so I didn't work on it as much as I should have. So now I'm like, right, got to get it finished by the end of January. So that's what actually I'm going to typing away, but, you know, pop on some good music and you just get typing.
Fantastic.
So yeah, so getting really get, we're going to publish our manual so that it's proper book. We're going to start trying to get ourselves in the press a bit, and then, you know, once we've got everything running like clockwork, we're going to start slowly looking at how we can grow. So growing might mean there's so many ideas right now. It might mean adding different types of classes, maybe adding a next level course, because right now it's very much beginner intro, right, but an advanced course.
Yeah.
It could mean branching out and doing classes, different like events or locations. You know, there's so many online classes. So we're going to just slowly, step by step, grow. You know, the goal, all income, eventually, maybe in 10 years' time, an all encompassing for
amazing.
Everyone.
I franchise that out. I'm sure there'll be people in Scotland.
Yeah, you know, maybe one day make it. I mean, my dream for it to be a school of just sexuality in general. You know,
sex
ed really need.
So, what, as a teacher and as a dom,
are you talking as pros or as lifestylers?
Any advice for professionals or for... I tend to find a lot of shame. I know if someone would advise for them.
Well, actually, I do a lot because I have a lot of clients who come to me. And I think the best piece of advice I can ever give someone is to tell them nobody is living your life but you. So it doesn't fucking matter if you're not doing it the way other people want you to do it, because they are not you, and they are busy living their own lives. So you just do.
Excellent.
And stop.
And the last thing, put a message. I'm in battle.
I've given up on battling with them because I think when you just push against people, you will never get it because you're just reinforcing. I think the most important thing is to listen to people. So, you know, swerves are swerves for a reason, right? So it's about understanding what brought them to see life like that, mm-hmm. and making them feel heard. And if you make them, they might listen to you. So what I would say swerves out there would be, actually, beyond everything that I said, I would have a question, which would be, how do you consider yourself a feminist when you are negating a higher part of the...
It has been in my... How long have you that are on anyone? So, but it has been absolutely, I can catch up and insight. This has been cool. I need to...
Well, also, now that I no longer have the massive financial constraint that I used to have when I had my own dungeon in central London,
yes.
I'm really going to start traveling. So, going on to first, I get very nervous about travel because it's getting money and, oh my God, I'm not at home and my cats and this, and creature comforts. But myself to start traveling more. I'm going to try and do at least a weekend away every 2 months kind of thing. So it might be coming up to Scotland at some point this year, maybe.
Yay! Definitely come to Scotland, come to Glasgow, Edinburgh, Aberdeen it's all right. There's no dungeons there, so there's a fair, there's people that still want, or anywhere that have been a dominatrix, so they can be a bit, but yeah, we'll and stuff.
In the meantime, if you're at London, why not come to Berlin, very first Berlin Torture Garden next month?
Ooh, what day?
29th of February. 20. All the tickets have sold out. There's tickets available on
Top tip.
To Torture Garden. I'm going for a whole week.
I'm actually learning German. We have German Saturdays in this house. I can talk about going. Right, well, I'm going to go and get it out as soon as I can. It's been amazing.
Oh, my pleasure.
See you later. Bye.
Bye.